You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.
One of the most enjoyable interviews for me was with Brian Johnson. He's the lead singer of AC/DC, whose album sales worldwide have topped a staggering 200 million copies. Well, now they're back, celebrating almost 50 years on the road with their newest album, Power Up. I asked him about paying his dues in music before the audition that would change his life.
You know, I started my first pro band was in 1972, and that was Geordie. Mm. You know, but before that, I was playing in the social clubs and in the pubs and youth clubs, you know.
Yeah, of course, that's what I mean.
In them days, you seemed to serve your apprenticeship, you know, before you got on. You know, I remember it was my first professional band, and I was in London. Here's a little story for you. And I was out there, and we were sleeping in some digs, and we met Phil Lynott, a young lad, and he was just going, "Hello there." You know, and he said, "You're Geordie, lads." I said, "Yeah, we've got our first song on Top of the Pops tomorrow. I think we might make it, you know." And he said, "I've got a record here we've just made. You know, and he put it on." And it was as I was going over the Cork, and he said, "Do you like it?" I said, "That's brilliant." And it was just little things like that. You know, yeah. He was doing his apprenticeship, doing his chops.
Yeah.
But and we went all the way through, and 72, I was with Geordie, and then by 75, I think we were all broke. The band broke up, and we had nothing, and I went, you know, I had to find a job to pay me rent, you know. So, you know, it was, but then we started again, and I was with another band, and we're playing the clubs again, and that's when the boys came calling, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And when you were talking to Phil Lynott, like in terms of that Geordie was going to do Top of the Pops the next day, like Top of the Pops is about as big as it gets. Like you feel as though I've arrived. This is big. Geordie's going to be huge. And you did have a bunch of hit singles. You had a good handful of hit singles. But the point about it is that you get paid 90 quid on Top of the Pops. Did you really go out of the studios and take a bus home?
Yeah, that was it. That's what you did. I know some of our guys had to go somewhere with the van to pick something up. And we were staying in this council flat in Hackney with mattresses on the floor, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember standing outside at the bus stop waiting for the bus, the double-deck bus, to come and take us to somewhere near Hackney. And I remember seeing Slade went out in a big Rolls Royce, and I was going, "Jesus Christ, look at that." But, so we definitely served our time, you know, in the old days.
Yeah, and gosh, it's really funny.
Fun.
It's funny you should mention Slade, because it was Noddy Holder that was one of the names even mentioned to take over from Bon Scott by 1980 or 1979 direction. And, of course, you did the gig.
Well, like, you know, it wasn't just him, there was a few of them.
Oh, there were, yeah.
You know, the guy that was on the Breeders with Zen Pet, Gary Holden. Holden, yeah, yeah, he was mentioned and all of this. And I was just phoned and they said, "Would you like to come down?" And I said, "Well, you know, who is it?" And they wouldn't tell us who it was. They said, "This woman just said, I can't tell you." So I said, "Well, no, I'm not coming down to London." I said, "You know, I cannot afford it." But at the end, you know, she told us, and I said, "Well, I'll give it a shot. You know, I can, what's the worst that can happen?" You know. And so I went down, and but the day after, I read in the paper that there was this young Australian kid had got the job, and I fully expected it. You know,
yeah.
I thought, that sounds right. But now the boys phoned us and said, no, that's not true. So, you know, and then the next thing I know, I'm on a plane to the Bahamas to do this album, which, Back in Black, which, geez, now 40 years. Good, good.
And yeah, and more than 40 million album sales as well.
the five of us in this thing, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. They said, could you write some lyrics? And I went, yeah, sure, I'll give it a shot. And honestly, it was just the most fun. I think it was the happiest I've ever been.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, the boys wanted to do something special for Bon, you know. And so, and that was it. And this album is a special tribute for Malcolm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the same way as Back in Black was really a tribute to Bon, this one here now, yep. Power Up, is a tribute to Malcolm. But just a few details of those stories there. First of all, the woman who rang you up didn't want to mention the name of the band because the band were quite big, and just said, look, we just want you for an audition. We're not going to tell you who it is. This is Olga from the Volga, from Peter Mensch's office.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. How do you know that? It's Olga from the Volga. She was, yeah, you know, she said, I remember when I said to her, I said, well, you got to tell us the name. I said, because, you know, it could be anybody. And she went, this I cannot tell you.
But she did.
Can you give us a clue? I said, you know, what's the initials or something? And she went, it's ACDC. I went, ACDC. And she went, scheiße, I have said too much. And that's how I
felt. But you laid a trap for her. You're like, as though you might have known, like, what's the initials? Because the initials of ACDC are ACDC.
You know, it was funny.
Yeah, it really was. But hold on a second. But, Brian, the funny thing is, like, you went down and you borrowed, or should I say you stole, maybe a customer's car from your own business to get there. And
absolutely. Yeah, that's what you do.
That's what you do, indeed.
I did tell him afterwards.
Did you? But like,
it was
Brian,
an old Jag.
I know, but like, Brian, had you...
Jag. And the boys, I remember the boys in the band were just up. I was going, they were mightily impressed. They were going, Jesus Christ, you must be doing well.
Yeah, it wasn't your car. But like, the point of it is, had you given up the music business at that stage? I mean, like, for instance, you were very old, 32.
I was 32 and I was finished. I was going, you know, when I phoned him, I just said, I said, I'm 32 years old. You know, it's been a while since I've... done anything professionally, you know. Even though we had our band was very popular, Geordie 2 was a very popular band up in the north.
Yeah.
You know, it was different personnel and all that from Geordie. And we played all the clubs and, you know, we just rock and rolled and, you know, we did our own thing, which was not usual, and everybody had to do cover songs. Well, we kind of did them, but we just really rocked them up, you know. So... It was a fun time, and I never thought that I would get a chance. I'd been lucky enough once,
yeah.
You know. This was the icing on the cake, I suppose.
Yeah, but you did have a successful business at the time. You're making vinyl roof specialists. You were windscreens, all to do with cars, etc.
Yeah, we did. We're putting them on. I used to be a design engineer for turbines, and you know, and I couldn't go back there. I was too embarrassed to come back.
When you started with the AC/DC, like with that whole thing, as you say, it came out of the blue. I mean, you were playing a gig in Belgium or something like that at the very beginning, and one of these Euro halls, and the walls move if they want to get more people in, and suddenly more thousands were coming in all the time. Were you saying, yeah, wow, yeah, this is big rock and roll, this is a different league, am I good enough for this?
It was Namur in Belgium, and it was one of those new Euro halls, you know, them horrible big square things. But the manager came in, Peter Mensch came in, and he went, hold on there. Because it was only for, like, about 2,000 people, you know, just to try everything out. And he said, hold on, we've got to wait an extra half an hour. There's about an extra 2,000 people outside, and all want to get in, you know. And so, that, you know, they just push the walls out on these things. You know, they're on big runner-type things, you know.
Yeah.
And I think by the time that they just couldn't wait anymore, there was about 6,000 or 7,000 in this big echoey hall. And there we were, and we walked on, and I remember I was, you know, when I came on. And I still, to this day, I cannot remember that night. It was the first song was Shut Down in Flames. And the second song we were going to do is Bad Boy Boogie. And I was so nervous. I think I sang the same song to the two different tracks. I was that nervous.
Brilliant.
In my mind, I think I did.
Yeah.
But the crowd were great. You know, they just had, you know, R.I.P. Bon, you know, good luck, Brian.
Yeah.
You know, it was
right.
Really nice. And that just sort of helped me along, you know.
Fantastic. And by the way, I'm going to say something to you here now, and let's see if you remember this, right? Are you ready? The new high-powered mover from Hoover.
Oh, you're pulling them out there. You're running the swing. That was what I did 2 hours before I went to sing with AC/DC.
Yeah. And then very
soon... Come back to haunt us now.
Yeah, right, indeed. Yeah,
we found it somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I should find it and play it. You know, you should stick it at the end... stick it at the end of an AC/DC album. Because, by the way, you don't say the new high-powered mover. You sing
it. I'll pay the ransom.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, like, in terms of what you say about 1980 and Back in Black, like, you were suddenly in the Bahamas. I presume you felt in some ways that, like, you know, it was such a good time, so fun. They had some of the music. They asked you to write some of the lyrics. You just did it on the spot. And Bon Scott had mentioned to Angus that he'd heard you in the UK before in Geordie. Isn't that right?
We had spent a night together in Torquay. And it was absolutely bloody freezing, if you can imagine, and Torquay, and their bus had broken down, and they were freezing. So, you know, we'd try to make them as warm as possible in the dressing room or whatever, because, you know, they couldn't go anywhere, you know. And he was a nice chap. He wasn't anything like the Bon Scott I knew then. You know, he had a tooth missing. He had short hair. He was in this, like, folky, rocky folk band, you know. He was a talented kid then, by Christ. And thankfully, he remembered our performance, and he told the lads afterwards that, you know, that he rated us as a rock.
And what had you known, Brian, at that time about AC/DC? I mean, had you discovered them about a year before you joined on the Rock Goes to College program on television?
A kid, you know, the band I was in playing when, you know, around the clubs and all that, well, I was looking for something that was new and rocky and that was different from the other bands playing. And he came in and he said, listen to this, Brian, and it was a whole lot of Rosie. And I went, oh, dear me, we can do that. And so we started with that one. And then we did Highway to Hell, you know.
Yeah.
And the kids just loved it. We kept it right till the end. And the audience just went crackers for it. And I said, boy, oh, boy. And then I saw them on Rock Goes to College, the boys, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, these guys are dynamite. But, you know, it was typical of Great Britain. You just didn't hear them on the radio, not unless it was like past 10 o'clock on a Saturday night or something.
Yeah,
you know, Johnny.
Yeah.
That's the way it's always been there.
By the way, I never even asked, will there be a tour? Are you going? By the way, 50 years in 23. So might you do a world tour if the
car... Well, we're talking about... We rehearsed in Holland earlier in the year, and we all went fabulous with the new Here and Peace, and we just said, hey, let's talk about going out. And, of course, we left Holland, and 3 days later, the virus caught up with the world, and we just have been frustrated ever since, just sitting on my hands, just dying to get out there. You know? So, you know, if we can get rid of this bloody thing, yes, absolutely, we'll be the first ones out.
That was Brian Johnson, lead singer of AC/DC, talking to me on the release of the band's 17th full-length album and their first new music in 6 years. Now, in April of 2020, I spoke to Fergal Lawler of the Cranberries about the Cranberries' famous song, Zombie. In fact, more specifically, we spoke about the video for Zombie, which was predicted to reach 1 billion views on YouTube, a record only shared by a select few bands. We were keeping a close eye on YouTube when I talked to Fergal. It's like we're waiting to see if the baby has been born. any news yet, Fergal?
No, it's very, very close. It's kind of any minute or else in the next hour or so.
It's a laugh in one way, isn't it? It's great. I mean,
bizarre.
Yeah, how do you feel about it, Fergal?
It's just overwhelming to try and think of that many people watching the video. You know, it's crazy from a song that was written in a small little shed in Limerick.
Yeah, I mean, it was a song like it was a very serious song in terms of what Dolores was doing. Dolores O'Riordan, like, it was a seething condemnation of the IRA from something that had happened. Just tell me about the song.
Dolores had read about the Warrington bombing in the paper, and she was really angry about it, and just frustrated about the whole way innocent people get dragged into war. And she was really angry and frustrated, and kind of came into the rehearsal room one day and said, look, I have a song, it's really angry, it's really powerful, you know, have you got distortion pedals, can you make it loud and hit the drums loud, you know, because normally you'd be kind of told to keep it quiet because it was a small little room we were in. So we were kind of delighted with this. Okay, yeah, hit harder, play louder. And then we started playing the song live and instantly got an amazing reaction from people because it was just a really powerful song live.
And also, like, you mean, like she has said in many interviews, like, you know, these stupid, psychotic bastards who have some stupid idea about something, and they send a warning in Warrington, and then they didn't, sorry, they sent a warning and didn't say where the bombs were, and people, one bomb goes off, and people run into the other bomb, and Jonathan Bell, aged 5, and Tim Perry, aged 12, mm-hmm. were blown apart and killed, obviously, and just many, many people injured as well. And she just got so outraged and so annoyed with everything. It was basically a song about a cry against, you know, man's inhumanity to man, and then, as she put it, and man's inhumanity to children as well.
Yeah.
And that's where it came from. Now, in terms of the song, she did it on an acoustic guitar, didn't she, really? And then when she comes to the studio, did she say to you, Fergus, for crying out loud, you know the way you usually drum? Forget it. We're talking John Bonham here.
Well, she wrote the song at home on an acoustic guitar, and then when she arrived into the studio, she had an electric, and that's when she kind of said, okay, it needs to be more angry, you know, because we were playing fairly softly, and she said, no, a bit more anger.
And also,
you couldn't really hear the lyrics or anything because she was singing through a guitar amp, basically.
Oh, right, I see. And also, like, the guy, I mean, the video is what we're talking about here in terms of a billion hits on YouTube. And the guy who made that video made the famous Smells Like Teen Spirit video.
Yeah, Sam Baer. He was a great director, really great guy. And he was kind of the flavour of the month director, we'll say. So the record company kind of said, look, this guy is really good. He did Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, and we knew that video, obviously, and loved it, and we said, look, we'll give it a go. And we met him, and he was really great guy, full of energy and just amazing positivity. We had to kind of fight to get it released as the first single, because, you know, there was a lot of people kind of saying, oh no, it's too political, you can't be doing that. But we said, look, it's a great song. We played it live loads of times before we even recorded it, and got great reaction from people. And we said, look, we feel really strongly we need to release this song as the first single. And we kind of fought and fought for a while, and eventually they agreed. And, you know, it developed because it was a song really about injustice to innocent people that are dragged into war situations or whatever, you know, especially children. And it developed into a song of peace, really, and just trying to vent our frustration, I suppose, at how people are still doing the same things, second 20 years, 30 years later from when that song was written, you know. And I think that's why it's lasted so long, because people can relate to it.
Yeah, I mean, what do you call it? Dolores, I'd be looking at TV and saw the mother of one of the kids, and I've got a quote from her. She says, I feel so sad for her that she carried him for 9 months and been through all the morning sickness, which she mentioned in the interview, by the way, the whole thing, and some, I won't mention the word, beginning with a P and ending with a K, some airhead, some brainless psychopath thought he was making a point. And then the fact also, carried out in the name of Ireland, was another thing that really annoyed Dolores, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, Fergal, you're not going to believe this. I swear to God, I thought this might happen. I swear to God, in the last 10 seconds, it has hit the billion. It has actually hit
oh
in the
God.
Middle of this damn interview.
That's mad.
That is mad. It was actually, cause we knew it was getting there, all right. I was talking to BJ early in the week as well. That is so weird. It's hit a billion views on YouTube, the song.
Oh, that's lovely. I really hope Dolores has a big smile on her face.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking, first of all, do you think she has anything to do with this in the last 6 months?
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.